somewhere that only fools and idiots follow children. I'm not sure which category I belong. We have a wonderful group of kids. Some of them that had been sick and couldn't come to practice were well this morning, and they wanted to be in the program. So it's good to have that much of enthusiasm. The Christmas Story has everything needed for a great story. There's political intrigue, conflict, anticipation, fear, doxology, and pure amazement. The one thing that impresses me about the Christmas Story is how simple and unadorned it really is. I'm captured by the insignificant element of life and how the insignificant element is changed when it is infused by the presence of God. The happening places of the world were Rome and Syria. The people who ruled others lived there, and that was what mattered. No one cared much about Palestine, tucked away in a small corner of a little Roman lake, except God. Our story focuses on the insignificant Bethlehem. The city of David was not all that important in terms of size and clout. But notice that when God comes near, the entire focus of life changes. The event that would make headlines was taxes. Still does. But think. God began the salvation of the world with the birth of a baby. Babies are born every day. The Bethlehem Reporter News would have read the following day under births, Mary and Joseph, a boy, Jesus. Big happens every day. But that's the wisdom of God. When God comes near, even little, insignificant, everyday events take on spiritual power. And Christmas announces that all places and all people and every event in our lives matters to God. That means Abilene, Texas, Exodus MCC, and each one of us. What we do matters to the King of the universe. The important people of the world were mentioned. There was Caesar Augustus and Quirinius. They were the movers and the shakers. And when they spoke, people listened. But our story focuses on different players. A young couple from Nazareth, shepherds, and innkeepers. Luke tells us that Jesus was born in the stable of an inn. Now the Greek word for that was kataluma. And it translates either the guest room of a home, or literally the breaking up of a journey. If we translate it guest room, that means that his own relatives living in Bethlehem had no place or time for Jesus. Often in ancient Israel, the journey between towns would take longer than a day, so ancient stopovers, a sort of KOI, you know, campgrounds of Israel, developed alongside the roads, and it's possible that this inn was just such a stopover for caravans on their way through Jerusalem. This kind of inn had no innkeeper. They were simply crude walls encircling an area for the animals. The nicer of these inns would be two-story structures where overnight guests slept on the upper story while their animals rested underneath in a kind of ancient parking lot. So Mary and Joseph ended up in the parking lot, along with the camels and the donkeys and the other animals, all dirty, stinky, noisy, and probably alone. And if there was an innkeeper, how would he have known that the couple he let stay in the stable of his inn were key players in the incarnation of God? To him, they were just another homeless family seeking shelter that night. You know, looking at that story reminds us that we can't judge the value or the worth of others by their outward appearance. An ordinary couple, and later that evening, an infant boy. How was the innkeeper to know that he was entertaining the Son of God? We cannot begin to guess the value and the worth, the potential that lies within each one of us. It's just not possible. King Herod looked at Jesus and saw a rival for his throne, a problem that was to be disposed of quickly, if not ruthlessly. The shepherds and the wise men looked at this little baby lying in the manger and saw the Messiah, the appointed of God. And Jesus looks at us and sees people worth the life of God. It's vital that we don't judge by outward appearances, because God often comes to us in unusual and unexpected ways. God came to Moses in a burning bush. God came to Samuel in a still small voice. And God came to a busy, distracted world as a travel-weary couple and a newborn infant. The joy of Christmas for me is that God uses the apparently insignificant and makes it meaningful. God used insignificant people. Mary, the mother of Jesus, was a poor girl of Nazareth. She wasn't fashionable, wealthy, or learned. She wasn't a high priestess, or royalty, or even a prophetess. She wasn't a star of stage or screen, or a highly paid sports figure. Joseph wasn't wealthy, and the shepherds were outcasts. Yet these people, God chose to star in the first Christmas drama. Bethlehem wasn't a political center or a capital, but it was chosen as the place for this event. God uses insignificant places for great events. A borrowed room for the Last Supper, a hillside to feed 5,000, a wooden cross, and a rock tomb to bring about salvation, and a stable in Bethlehem as the birthplace of the King. God makes the insignificant meaningful. And God uses insignificant things to teach earth-changing lessons about love and generosity. There were 5 loaves and 2 little sardines, 2 copper pennies, 1 lost sheep, and a manger, a common feeding trough for animals in the stable of an overcrowded inn. Remember the Christmas story of the littlest angel? While all the other angels were gathering what seemed to be rare and marvelous gifts for the Christ child, the littlest angel presented a rough, unsightly box with a collection of 2 white pebbles from the brook by his home, a dead butterfly with golden wings, a sky blue robin's egg from the nest by his door, and a worn out, tooth marked collar from his favorite dog. And yet this was the gift that the storyteller says became the Star of Bethlehem. God makes the insignificant meaningful. And because of that, nothing that you and I offer to God is really insignificant. What appears to be nothing in the eyes of the world may be the very thing God needs to transform lives this Christmas season. It's important that we recognize the presence of the divine so as not to miss an opportunity to interact with God. You remember the children's story of the fourth wise man. Artaban missed his rendezvous with the others and spent his life seeking the new king. And throughout his life, he gradually used the Christ child's gift to help the poor and unfortunate people he met. And 33 years later, having given away all of his fortune, he was visited by Christ on the way of the cross. And Artaban realized that in those people he had helped, he had come face to face with God. God is where people are starving and hungry, where people are powerless and homeless, where people are fighting and dying, where people struggle for freedom and justice and human dignity. And yet, yes, in the midst of places where people are grieving the loss of their children and their friends. It's when we look beyond our immediate world that we can hear Jesus saying to us, "Well done. You did it for one of the least of these, my brothers and my sisters. And you did it unto me." Now, if you're not into children's fantasies, here's a dose of reality. Some years ago at a resort area along the East Coast, a small community was having an open meeting because of the town's serious financial problems. Among the people attending the meeting was a stranger. He tried to make a comment as various projects were considered, but he was interrupted. So he kept still, and he left early. And after he left, someone arriving late came in and said breathlessly, "What was he doing here? Is he going to help us?" And the rest of them asked, "What are you talking about?" To which the latecomer replied, "You mean you don't know? That was John D. Rockefeller, the millionaire. His yacht is in our harbor. Didn't you get his help?" And sadly, the town shook its head. "No, we didn't know who he was." The Messiah is among us. His ship is in our harbor, and he's come to give us life. I love the last lines of the German legend, The Christmas Gift. An old man who had waited all day to welcome Christ to his home. But he had been continually interrupted by people who needed what he had and was saving to entertain God. And at the end of the day, and know Jesus, he angrily confronts God about the broken promise. And God says to him, "Three times my shadow crossed your floor. Three times I came to your lonely door. For I was the beggar with bruised cold feet. I was the woman you gave to eat. And I was the child on the homeless street." Be alert for the presence of the divine in those you meet. When God Almighty condescended to be born into a peasant family in a third world country, God drastically inflated the value of human life. Everybody is a somebody. Every person has intrinsic value, identity, and dignity. Each person is in the image of God. The maker of the universe became a baby who couldn't speak or eat solid food and had to be changed at regular intervals. A little human who depended on a teenage couple for shelter and food and love. And when this baby became a grown Messiah, he taught that whatever you do for even the least important person on earth, you do for God. And whatever you fail to do for the least important person on earth, you fail to do for God. And suddenly, the value of humanity skyrocketed. Christmas is a mystery which occurs over and over each time we respond to Christ's command to reach out to the lowest of society, and especially those whom society would ignore. In short, Christmas is an encounter with the Holy One that continues to happen to us as we look up, look around, look beyond, and interact with all the people we meet. Christmas is also the coming together of extremes at an ultimate level. Omnipotence takes the form of helplessness, in which the hands that made the world would become hands too small to reach beyond a crib. That staggers the imagination and confounds the mind. And yet, this is the miracle of Christmas. We don't have the capacity to comprehend that which is so utterly different from ourselves. But God moved to the other side. God decided to take a form we could understand. And God knowledge became possible on that first Christmas night. From the loftiest heights of the unknowable, God moved down through the stairway of the stars and entered history in the form of a little, tiny, helpless baby. God became what we are so that we might understand what God is. Extremes met that night. Divinity became humanity. Christmas is all about one thing. One tiny four-letter word that has the capability to change the world. It's the reason for the incarnation. The reason for the season, if you will. That word is love. We can talk about the other words of Advent, hope, peace, and joy. They're important. They're a part of Christmas. But it was love that pushed God to shed the trappings of divinity and come to earth with a plan to bring wayward children home that changed our world. And when that kind of sacrificial, unconditional love touches us and becomes a part of us so that we find ourselves determined to share it, to go and tell it on the mountain and in the valleys and in the cities and across the oceans, we'll find it no longer necessary for us to be waiting on the world change. The change in us, regardless of our circumstances, will be visible. Our lives will shine with the radiance of that star that announced the birth of Jesus so long ago, and the world will be filled with light and light. The mystery of Christ, of Christmas, is that we encounter God in others. The miracle of Christmas is that divinity became humanity. And this is the magic of Christmas. What you see isn't always what you get. Just another homeless family? I think not. Merry Christmas.